This is Patsy with a Z. Welcome to Joy on Paper, a program for writers and those who dream of writing. Oh boy, I am just waiting for a call in from, well, one of the most important authors in America, Max Allen Collins. He writes the Dick Tracy comic books, of course, and his big seller, of course, is the Nate Heller series. So I'm just waiting. I hope that he's going to call in a few minutes. We are waiting for him. He is in Iowa somewhere. I hope they don't have a snowstorm. I remember the only time I was in Iowa, they had a snowstorm, and it was quite terrible. So we're just waiting now to get him on, and we will be talking about this wonderful series of his, the Nate Heller series. Oh, boy. We're going to try again, I hope. Let's see what's happening with him. And meanwhile, at the bottom of the hour, I'm going to be talking to Phil Vega. And that's going to be it's always a pleasure to talk to him. He is a local writer, and I was so thrilled the first time that I read his book. It was just so amazing. Sometimes this happens to me. I'm reading a book, and I just see it as a film in my head, and that was his first book, Last Exit to Montauk. I love that book. It will make a wonderful film someday, and I hope that somebody will pick him up. But meanwhile, one of the things that I want to talk to you about today, it's just, it's the beginning of the new year, and this is so, it's so much fun to think of. Well, first of all, the new year has to be better. That's for sure. We need a better year after 2020. But I am pleased with all of the people who contacted me and said that during 2020, as they were listening to the program and as I was encouraging you all to write, that you started writing. And I am looking forward to when the day comes that you're going to contact me and say, boy, I finally finished my book. I started it in 2020 during the pandemic. I was really going crazy, but I started it and I did it. And now can I be on Joy on Paper? So I'm really hopeful that I will hear from all of you. And now we have him. Oh, my goodness. This is so exciting for me. I wanted to start the year with a bang, and I can't think of anyone who's had more bang bangs and wahoos and pows in his books than Max Allen Collins. Hi, Max.
Hello, thank you for having me. Sorry, there was a little bit of a delay there. We were kind of caught up watching what's going on right now.
I'm not. I'm not. I'm in the studio. I can't deal with it right now.
I know.
You need to take a break and talk about. Let's talk about all of your wonderful work. Of course, you are a Mystery Writer of America Grandmaster in 2017, I think. Yes.
And so that's correct.
You are the 11th Grandmaster that has been on my program, and it is so exciting for me.
Oh, that's great. And I'm in very good company, I know. It's humbling to see the list of who some of those people are.
Oh, they are all. They are also one. I've just had so much fun because, but when it comes to books, I must say that there are so many things in your books that relate to me because I love these books. The Nate Heller series is fantastic. Now, I was raised in Detroit, and I never went to Chicago. So everything I know about Chicago area comes from what I've read in your books.
Well, that's very nice of you. I tell you something funny. I heard very early on in the Nate Heller run about when the second or third book was published. I heard from Father Andrew Greeley, if you remember. Father Greeley was a Chicago mystery writer and had a lot of success. And he wrote me about one of the books and said, how did a Chicago boy like you do all this stuff about the, rural America so well? Because that book had the outlaws like Ma Barker and John Dillinger who were storming through the Midwest. And I had to write him and say, Father Greeley, I am a Midwest rural boy. I've never lived in Chicago. And the idea that I had fooled, someone as hardcore Chicago as that, someone identified with Chicago, that was very gratifying.
and you're not in Hollywood, you know, and you could be with your fame and fortune and all of the things that you've done in Hollywood. You could be living there in Beverly Hills, but you stayed there in the Midwest.
I have, and that was a decision I made very early on, though I had a lot of from some people I really trusted, like Donnelly Westlake was a mentor of mine, and he thought I should either move to Hollywood or New York. But I thought you could work from anywhere. I stayed, and that was a little bit before some of the regional writing was starting to happen in mystery fiction, and so I sort of staked out the Midwest.
Well, and you do it so well, as I said, because I never went to Chicago. I don't know why. Somehow it was, you know, people from Detroit really didn't think much of Chicago in those days. So, but...
Well, you certainly have some great mystery writers who have written about Detroit.
Oh, yes. Oh,
you may
yes.
have heard of a guy named Elmore Leonard.
Oh, yeah. I did. I have. But, you know, the fun thing about your books, well... And I think of you every once in a while when they have those man in the street things where they ask people, you know, who was the president and who was,
right.
and they don't know anything. I mean, people who have apparently graduated from high school, some from college, they have no understanding. I mean, they could not put President Truman before President Eisenhower. Where's Johnson? They don't even know Johnson, you know, and I'm thinking, oh, all they have to do. If they read Max Allen Collins, they'll know so much history. American, I mean, your books really can be used as a college course, or actually high school. They need it in high school, of learning American history, 20th century American history. You cover it all.
Well, that's very kind of you. One of the oddities, I guess, about the 20th century is that you have the series of crimes and mysteries that are either controversially solved, like, say, the Lindbergh case, where they thought they knew who had done it and executed him, and flat-out mysteries like Roswell and the disappearance of Amelia Earhart. And they kind of are spread throughout the 20th century. So if in dealing with each of these in these books over the years, as individual mysteries. Most recently, I did the Sam Shepard murder case that the Fugitive was kind of based upon.
Do No Harm. Yeah, I know. Oh, that's a great book.
And that's the most current one. But I've done everything, you know, from the Black Dahlia to, as I say, the Lindbergh kidnapping. And along the way, you encounter a lot of the major political figures. You certainly counter a lot of the major pop cultural figures. So as you're solving these mysteries, or as I should say, as Nate Heller is solving these mysteries, he's encountering all the major figures of 20th century America, and it becomes a kind of a history.
It is a history. That's what I'm saying. You know, in high school, most kids, I mean, they don't learn history anyway. Obviously, we can see that. But if they actually read your books, they would be fascinated. They would want to. What's wonderful about your book? You do such great research, and this comes through that, you know your subject. You've taken this time. I think probably it's great that you did not get, you know, Hollywood. Because if you had gone to Hollywood, you wouldn't be doing all this research. You'd be going to, you know, parties and openings and red carpet things. But being in the Midwest, you have plenty of, like, winter weather.
That's right.
Because I said before you got on the phone, the only time I was in Iowa was in a snowstorm. I thought, what is this place?
We were sheltering in place here before it was a thing.
Yeah, exactly. So you have all this time to do this research, and thank God we have the internet, so it really helps.
Well, it is, and you mentioned a funny thing there, because I started doing this, the first Nate Heller was published in 1983, so I did, for probably the first 10 years of working on Nate Heller, there was not, internet for me. I actually bought one of my first computer to do Nate Heller because, it was so much rewriting was being done as I did my research, and things would be uncovered, and I'd have to go back and fix things, and you had to do your manuscripts back then. Every time you started, you made a correction, you had to start retyping from the beginning, basically. So I think about how long I did just newspaper research and newspaper file research, and haunting the libraries. And my work is a lot easier now because I'm in many cases. Well, I still do the research with magazines, books, and so on. I can I can just do a quick check on something. Like a lot of times you have maybe a word or phrase and you want to try to find out whether or not it was in common usage yet. And that's these little tiny things like brand names and so on. What were the songs that were popular in a given period? I've written about the 1960s, 1970s, and 1980s, and I still have to research them even though I lived through them. Because, if you say to somebody, what was in the top 40 in, January 1971, you may have been around, but you're going to scratch your head.
Exactly. But the research in the libraries and going through those old newspapers and going through old magazines, that's fun, isn't it?
Well, yes, and I have built up quite a library here over the years. One of the things I've used a lot, and if you've read the books and read my little bibliographies in back, you know this, is the WPA guides, the guides that were done by the Writers Project during the Depression, where Roosevelt basically funded writers to do these guides on every state and many of the major cities, just to kind of keep the writers afloat and not starving, and giving them money but getting some work out of them. And so I'm constantly using, the guides on New York or California. There's Manhattan guides, and so that has been something that has given the books a great deal of authenticity.
And, it's funny, of all the characters, there's so many characters that, flow through your book, real characters, real people, and one of them is Earl Stanley Gardner.
Yeah.
Which is funny, because the very first adult book I read was a Perry Mason. Now,
yes, I think the first one I read was a Perry Mason. I read The Case of the Moth-Eaten Mink.
Well, it was very funny. I started reading, like Beatrix Potter, I started reading at the age of 2.5. Comic books. I learned from comic books because we were very poor.
I'm not counting comic books, but I did too.
No, you
beat me a little bit, but I started at about 4 or 5, and I thank my mother because she liked Dick Tracy, and she started me on Dick Tracy, which is a very violent comic strip.
Yeah, well, I wasn't allowed Dick Tracy.
Too young. She'd probably be called by child services today,
Yeah,
but, I got into that stuff very young, very young.
Well, it's good for you because
it worked out.
The Dick Tracy. I wasn't allowed to read Dick Tracy. I know, my father did, but I was more in the Archie and Little Lulu and that phase when I started to learn. But I was.
Well, let me ask you something. Did you ever have this problem at going to the library and trying to check out books from the adult section and being chased back into the children's section?
Oh, did I? Oh,
yeah.
Wow. I was at McGregor Public Library in Detroit, a beautiful, one of those beautiful, buildings that were built back in the 30s, again, to promote reading, a wonderful building, and they had a beautiful children's room, oak and fireplace and everything. But I wanted always to sneak up to the stacks. And
and
to get up there, they had metal stairs, and I'd have to tiptoe up there. And I was in those stacks at a very young age, but I'd get caught and I'd be chased out. But eventually, by the time I was 9 years old, the librarians all knew me and that I had read everything in the children's room. So what could they do?
Well, that was to some degree the case with me. I'd read so much. They had a summer reading program, and you could take four books out a day, and I did.
Yeah.
And of course, they were, you know, they were long books. They were those kid books. And I always was fascinated, and this really relates to why I got into writing, even Nate Heller. When I saw, a TV show or a movie, and my mom took me to lots of movies from a very young age, I would see what the source was. If it was historical, I'd want, you know, if it was about some king, I would want to read about that king. And then if it was based on a book, I'd want to read that book. Well, most of those books, obviously, because they were movies made for adults, basically, were in the adult section. So I'd want to go over there and check out, you know, Northwest Passage, or these various books, Gone with the Wind, you know, and I would have to fight to do it.
Oh, I know.
My mom to check them out for me, which, frankly, she did.
Oh, I know that feeling. This is what's so wonderful, having this joy of reading that we had from a young age, and this adventure that really we could find things. We'd see something, or we'd see a movie, we'd see a television, and there's more behind that, and we wanted to know, really, as I start this program, I was say the story behind the book. Well, that's what I always wanted to know.
Well, with the Nate Heller books, you know, I do this, as you know, this sort of essay at the end, a bibliographical essay, where I talk about what the work was, what I looked at, how I you know, what's true and what isn't true in the books, because while they're quite accurate, I do a certain amount of time compression, and I do a certain amount of composite characters, just to be able to organize it so that it's not quite as untidy as history. But I let people know what I read. And I constantly hear from readers who say that when they read something like Do No Harm, it led them into other books on the subject. And I sometimes kind of recommend, I kind of say, this one isn't really that good, this one is really good, and it becomes almost a reading guide in the back of the book if you got really interested in, say, The Black Dahlia. That's Angel in Black is my book, not the Black Dahlia is another author's book, but it's about the Black Dahlia case, Angel in Black, and you can be led to what the source material was if you're that interested.
Well, I think that you do get people interested, and that's so wonderful. Now, one of the people that, of course, has been in your books is Jimmy Hoffa.
Yep.
And I wanted to tell you a story about that. Now, I don't know. Did you ever meet his children?
No. I have met a few people that are relatives or friends of people I've written about, which is always a little nervous-making.
Yeah.
Because I kind of treat them, once I research them, I just try to treat them as if I invented them, which is maybe dangerous. But you met some of Hoffa's children, I think.
Well, no. I used to sit on Jimmy Hoffa's lap, and as a matter of fact, he gave me my name.
Wow.
My father was in the Union, and when I was a little girl, because by the time I was five, I was reading at such an advanced age, I really couldn't fit in a kindergarten. I mean, that would be ridiculous. I was reading, you know, way, way above kindergarten. So my father used to take me with him to his Union meetings. And whenever I would be there, he would, you know, there's always that, like, a stage at one end of the meeting room where he'd be with his people sitting on chairs. And he'd see me and he'd yell, "Patsy!" And I'd go running up and I would sit in his lap. And sometimes I fell asleep in his lap while he's talking to people. And he used to say, 2 bits, 4 bits, 6 bits, a dollar. If you don't give me a hug, I'm going to holler. And so when I finally got to start in school, you know, like when they started teaching us to write, I said my name was spelled with a Z. And of course the teacher said, no, it's not. You know,
yeah.
And I said, it's Z. Jimmy says so.
Wow.
And I wish, you know, because my dad was in the Union, one time my mother made Jimmy a cake for his birthday. He was born on Valentine's Day. And they had a union dance. And my mother made this big sheet cake. And in those days, well, even today, strawberries come from here, from Plant City here in Florida. And so a yes. truck came up and, you know, being truckers, we got, we used to get a lot of strawberries, I'll tell you that. Anyway, she made this wonderful strawberry cake, big sheet cake with boiled white frosting. I remember it so well. And it was for the dance. And it was, and he came, he dropped by to say hi to the guys at the dance. And so, you know, so I remember him so well from the point of view that I, you know, sitting in his lap and he'd hold me and he smelled so nice because actually in those days, a lot of men didn't wear cologne and anything, but he did. And he was just, he smelled so nice and he was so sweet and not at all what they depict him in the movies. You know, I it's just, he was so Midwestern actually. And I yeah. hate when they make him into a mobster from Brooklyn because he wasn't. I mean, he was a typical Midwestern kid, you know, and he started the union when he was 19. People don't realize what he went through.
Yeah, very young.
I mean, you know, he started it because he saw all the guys sitting around, you know, waiting days sometimes for a job. So there's a lot of, you know, I wish sometimes they'd just be a little bit fair with him instead of this giving him this mobster look. Because actually, I don't think he ever swore in front of kids. I mean, he would never swear in front of his kids.
Right. I've written about him a little bit. He's in several of the books, yeah. and I'm thinking I'm going to be doing more about him in the next couple of books. So stay tuned. But one of the interesting things to me is how young some of these figures are who we see depicted in Hollywood as basically middle-aged men. I've done with a writer named A. Brad Schwartz two nonfiction books about Elliot Ness, and the first one, which is called the Scarface and the Untouchable. You don't know that most people do not know. I should say you might that. Elliot Ness, when all of this began with The Untouchables, was basically about 26 years old. And at his height, at sort of the St. Valentine's Day Massacre height of Al Capone, he was 29.
I know.
These were young people. They're not, you know, it's not Jason Robards or Robert De Niro. These were, in some cases, college kids, basically, like Ness, fairly fresh out of college, and guys like Capone, who just come up through the streets. And, you know, and I try to, this is part of the research for the Nate Heller books, is to try to get a fix on who the real people are and what they were really like, and that somebody like Hoffa, you know, was not a monster.
No. No, I that's why I get so upset sometimes about it, because once, you know, whatever happened with the union, but I tell you, I know, because, you know, I knew a lot of Teamster people, and they had been treated so badly by the employers. They suffered so much. They were just abused by the employers. And he was 19 when he started it. He just got yeah. mad one day. He just said, "Why are you doing this? Why are you sitting here for 3 days? Not 3 hours, 3 days waiting for a job. Your families are starving. You don't make any money." And he just went in, really, and changed everything.
Yeah, it's to me, it's really interesting how someone like him, who we just think of as sort of eternally a middle-aged man, these people climb, you know. These things don't happen overnight. And many of them got very interested or very involved in whatever their line of work was. That happened early. That happened early. And it's just, of course, lives were shorter then.
Well, you know, that's true. But, you know, I like the fact that you do depict people. You really make this effort to tell history as it was. As you said, you compress some things and that. But the basic stories, the basic people, I think you give a fair shift to.
Well, when I wrote about, for example, Huey Long in a Nate Heller book called Blood and Thunder, I did all a lot of the negative stuff about him, of course, because there certainly was some. But he was a very, you know, he's portrayed, I think, as a very likable person. And Heller actually likes him. And that makes it more, that also, not only is it more interesting, it's more complicated.
Exactly. And that's why I think these books hold up so well. That's why you have fans. I was going to say, you know, your fans, like, they study these books, they follow you, you have a great blog, and I know that they go into detail, they know your characters, and I was wondering if anybody had ever added up, like, how many people were shot in your books, because, you know, you have fans who check out everything.
Yeah, it's... I actually have had a couple of fans over the years who did timelines on Heller, because one of the problems with Heller is that I've got to make sure none of these crimes overlap, so I don't put him in two places at the same time. And it's—I mean, I understand that it's a little unbelievable that Nate Heller could be involved in everything from, you know, the Lindbergh kidnapping to the Kennedy assassination. But at the very least, I got to make sure he's not in two places at the same time. And since I've done a certain amount of short stories, those are sometimes the ones that fall between the cracks for me, that I've got to make sure, because I didn't do a formal timeline on this stuff. It just sort of evolved, and God bless these fans who have, a couple of them have made these elaborate timelines. So I would know where he was, you know, at a given time. And I'm also very lucky that I got in kind of on the ground floor at Amazon. They came to me very early on. I was getting ready. I'd been away from Nate Heller for about 10 years because, as you know, I did the Road to Perdition as a graphic novel, and then I did a number of follow-up books to Road to Perdition. And so Heller kind of went on the shelf for about 10 years. And when I did he did a comeback in a book, and then basically I thought, all the other books are out of print. So let me see if I can get a couple of these books back in print. And I was approached by Amazon, actually Thomas and Mercer is the company. They wanted to bring everything back out and put it on ebook and in trade paperback. And I said, well, you know, over what time span? They said, all at the same time. And so now, and that was about 10 years ago, I guess, at this point. But everything's available now. So anything that you know, if you want to get on the, you know, Nate Heller train, it's not going to be frustrating where you're going to have to run around trying to find these books. The first something like 13 are at on Amazon at Thomas and Mercer, and then the subsequent group I did were for Forge, and that's the group that's out right now.
Well, that's the wonderful thing about the internet and about Amazon is that you can get these books, because before that we'd have to go around to secondhand stores and looking for books that we wanted, you know, if we missed something.
It was fun though, wasn't it?
Oh, it was fun. I still do. I would do it if we could actually go out anywhere.
If you could go out.
Yeah, but, you know, but it is
fun.
Well,
I go to my basement, which is like a secondhand bookstore.
Mine too. I don't have a basement. I have three closets. A laundry room, a living room, a bedroom, another bedroom. I've got, you know, thousands of books. And so...
Good for you.
And I also have... I've, you know, before I started this program, 5 years ago and for years, and I lived all over the world. So I traveled a lot, and every place we went, my husband would say, do you really need to take those books? do you really need those books? And I wouldn't want anything else. I wouldn't want furniture. I didn't care about clothes. I said, the books. The books come with me. So these books have traveled. Some of these books have traveled all over the world. And eventually, I had all these books. I just said, why? Why? And I never knew why. I really never knew why. And then one day on a whim, at 4 o'clock in the morning, I got the idea for this radio program. And I said, that's why. And
well,
you know.
My travels have a lot of it has been tied to Neheller and, you know, going to some of these places that aren't Chicago. You know, going to Nassau to look into the Sir Harry Oakes crime, which is a book called Carnal Hours. And going to Hawaii for Damned in Paradise, which is a book about the Thalia Massey rape and murder case. And so we've gone to some of these places, my wife Barbara and I, and I'll be going to these, you know, vacation paradises, but I'm looking for the crime scenes. And my wife was once asked about, you've gotten to go on a lot of these great, you know, these great trips. And she'd say things like, it'd be nice if we could go there where I wasn't looking for the murder house. And that would be what I'd be doing, would be trying to find these. We did in Nassau. We hired a chauffeur to take us all around the island, and it was all taking me to where murders had taken place.
Well, it adds depth to these trips. That's all I can tell. It's fun. Doing research is so much fun, and going to places and discovering things. When I was 21, I went to England because I wanted to live near where Jane Austen lived. So, you know, all of this, it's just all the excitement of loving books, loving stories. And,
yes.
You know, I just want to so much to get this through to people. Their lives will be so much richer if they actually read. I know that, you know, the television and movies and all of that is great, but there's a richness in reading those words and seeing those words on paper that just it's very special.
Well, there's an intimacy about writing, reading a novel, let's say. It's you and the author, and you're the movie screen that the movie is playing on, and it's a collaborative thing. You know, I sometimes see people argue about whether a book is good or not, as if they both had the same experience. But no two people have the same experience when they read a book. It's the author plus you. And that's what's really unique. I mean, everybody sees the same movie when they go in. They may interpret it differently. One may sit on the right side of the theater, one may sit on the left, or one may be in the balcony, but they're seeing the same movie. But when you read a book, you bring yourself to the table.
Well, and with you, well, of course, with the Nate Heller series, people can nowadays go back to the beginning, or they can start with the most recent one, which was released last March, and that's Do No Harm.
Right.
And you don't have to read them in order.
No, and they, I have to tell you that they actually weren't written in order, because I didn't know I was going to be doing a series. I did one book, which was True Detective, the first book. That was what I had an idea to do. Then they asked for more, and I did the first three sort of in chronological order. And then I started just sort of jumping around to whatever crime interested me at the moment. And I started gathering material on, again, controversial crimes or unsolved crimes. And then I would decide, oh, well, this would be a good one to do next. So if you read them in order of publication, you're not necessarily reading them in chronological order. In fact, you aren't.
Yeah, you aren't. And everybody can start with the, you know, this series. You have other series.
I do.
And of course we have to mention Dick Tracy, because we started to mention it when I was young. I wasn't allowed to read it, but at what point did you take it over? What year was that you took it over?
I took it over in late 1977. I was the second person to write it, and I did it for 15 years, right after Chester Gould, the creator, retired. And I'm hoping that material will be collected and you'll be able to find it. Some of the comics material that I've done, all the Road to Perdition stuff is available, as are the novels I did, the prose novels that I did. And also my character, Ms. Tree.
Oh, I like Ms. Tree.
Detective, female private detective. Those are being have been reprinted now, the first two of, I think, five volumes.
I think she's, you know, the preg. I was thinking of her, the pregnant
yes,
mystery.
Yes, One Mean Mother, that one is called.
I know.
And she's a very interesting character. She was arguably the first of the female private eyes of that wave of female private eyes that my friend Sarah Paretsky did with V.I. Warshawski, and another friend, the late Sue Grafton, did with Kinsey Mahone. We predated them just a little bit, Terry Beatty, the artist, and I. And I mentioned my wife, Barb, and I'd like to mention that she and I do a series together under a joint pen name, Barbara Allen. And those are very, I don't know if you're familiar with those, but they're very funny, cozy mysteries. They're very, you know, they're humorous. And they always have the word antiques in the title. The first one was called Antiques Roadkill.
I know. As a matter of fact, why hasn't she been on the program? She's got to come on the program now, okay? How about that?
Yes, get her on.
I will get her on because I, you know, there's I have a vast, you know, number of audience members, some like, you know, thrillers, some like
right.
cozy mysteries, you know, and I always have to, I try to get a little bit of everything all year long. I love to get memoirs. I love to get, you know, just a variety because I never know what is going to interest somebody. I'm always looking for the books that people will say, oh, I like that author. It sounded good. He sounded exciting about his character, or she really wants, you know, me to read about this antique mysteries. So my goal is to get people excited about reading because
I think
it enhances them.
The current one is called Antiques Fire Sale.
Uh-huh.
And again, you don't have to read those books in order. They're all, I think, still available, but there's also a Christmas one, which is called Antique Soho Homicides, which is three stories, and that's a fun one, kind of a sampler. So that would be a good one to try, although don't wait till Christmas. and the other thing I have out that's not been on very long is a book called, I'm trying to remember, Come Spy With Me, it's called. I was going to say come fly with me, but that's what we took off on. But a friend of mine named Matt Clemens and I write those, and we've done a couple now. And the first one is just out, is come spy with me, and it's the premise, which you may get a kick out of, is that it's about the real life, quote unquote, spy who James Bond was based on. So basically, it's a way to write James Bond books.
Well, I think you are just so prolific. As I said, I'm glad that you stayed there in the Midwest because people when I was in Hollywood, people weren't writing as much as partying. So I think it's great. I don't know if they're going to take. Probably it's going to be Nate Hell is going to be on streaming video at some point.
At some point, I think.
At some point, and
yeah.
I hope you hold on to the creative management of it because you don't want them to ruin it. Sometimes, so often they take a. They'll take, well, that's one of the things I love about your blog. I have to mention your blog because I think you have the single best writer's blog. I actually can't stand most writer's blogs. They just are annoying. They're a waste of time. Yours are not because you are honest. You are straightforward. You know, you tell whether it's about books or about the movies you see. I like the way that you talk about them.
Well, thank you. Thanks very much. And I mean, you know, so there's an aspect of the blog which is at Max Allen allancollins.com. But every Tuesday morning, my son Nathan posts it for me, and there's a certain amount of it that is just is promotional, where I say, here's what's coming out, here's what's on sale. You know, these books are on sale right now. But I try not to have it be just me hawking stuff all the time. So there's a lot of reviews of books, not books so much as movies, there's a certain amount of memoirs. I mean, the one that's on right now is a rather long memoir about Walter Tevis, who was one of my teachers at the Iowa Writers Workshop. Who there's some interest in him right now because he was the author of The Queen's Gambit, which has been a very popular miniseries on Netflix right now.
Yes, it's very. It's funny how many people were surprised. I'm not, in case people haven't seen it, I'm not going to say that the ending, but so many people would say to me, oh my goodness, they didn't expect that.
That's a very good, I've seen a lot of stuff lately, and that's as good as anything, and it's extremely faithful to the novel that this instructor of mine wrote, and I think people will find my little memoir about him interesting, because it's not all flattering, but it's fond.
Yeah, well, as I said, the blog is wonderful. We're always looking forward to the next book with you, and people can stay in contact with you through your Facebook page, which I know you're active in, and then the connects to the blog, and you even write some nice stuff about your mother. I was like, people.
Well, thank you. Some of it is nostalgic stuff. I guess I'm at that age where I'm thinking about some of this stuff.
Well, I always like guys who write nice things about their mamas. So,
thank you so much for having me today. And I apologize for being a little late to the party.
Oh, anytime. And I will get Barb on. And keep in mind, next time you write about Jimmy, that he smells sweet. He used to give me half dollars. I still have a whole collection of half dollars and sometimes silver dollars that he gave me. And because he would say, 2 bits, 4 bits, 6 bits, a dollar. If you don't give me a hug, I'm going to holler. And so that's my memory of Jimmy Hoffa. And I hope that you can reflect a little bit of that.
It's a good reminder, which is something I try to always think about when I'm doing historical stuff like Nate Heller. And I'm writing about real people, that they were real people, that they had, that they weren't just some single kind of cliched image.
Exactly. And he loved his kids. That's all he talked about was his kids, and mostly his son who played baseball. So he was a sweetheart to me, and he was born on Valentine's Day. So I always celebrate his birthday on Valentine's Day. Anyway, it has been a joy to talk to you. I wanted to start off the new year with a bang, and I started it off with the best.
Thank you so much. You've been a delight.
Okay, it's wonderful. Everybody, Max Allen Collins, Mystery Writer of America Grandmaster, that 11th one to be on Joy on Paper. Thank you so much for joining me today, Max.
Oh, it's been a pleasure. Thank you very much.
Okay, bye-bye now. Happy New Year to you and your family. Okay, whoa, we're going to go straight over to Philip Vega. Hi, Philip.
Hi, good morning. How are you, Beth?
Hi, good morning. Okay, well, I spent quite a bit of time there with Max because he is actually, Max Allen Collins is pretty special in this world of publishing and books because, wow, he is prolific. He's done 21 of the Heller books. I don't know. He's written over 100 books. And
wow.
I know that you started a little bit later in life.
He started
as a young man, but you're doing pretty well. We're talking today about your new book. And as everybody knows, I've always been, talking about your first book, which I loved, and the new book. Tell me about this book, The Search for Sarah.
Yeah, absolutely. So, one, Patsy, thanks for having me on your program this morning. Happy New Year. Thanks for inviting me. I'm excited. You know, since the last time we got together, Last Exit to Montauk actually won the 2020 Manhattan Book Award for YA fiction, and also placed for 2020, and also placed first place with the Top Shelf Award back in 2019. So that was real exciting for me. But my new novel, Searching for Sarah, which just came out on December 27th, this is a bit of a left turn for me. It's an interracial LGBTQ romance mystery novel. I describe it this way. I tell people, the main protagonist, to fulfill his older sister's dying wish, a grieving Hispanic man uses any means necessary, including her journals, to track down the love of his sister's life, a woman named Sarah. I tell people, Blow Her Mouth meets Gone Girl. So like my previous novels, Searching for Sarah, it does feature, white-collar Hispanic protagonists, like Last Exit to Montauk and The Captain and the Queen. It is set in the same Stony Brook universe, if you would, but like those novels, this too is standalone. While I do plant Easter eggs in each novel, for my fans, you don't have to have read the previous work to enjoy Searching for Sarah, which is available now, at all the major online retailers, Amazon, Barnes & Noble, Walmart, etc.
Well, it's a fascinating book and beautifully written with a great deal of sensitivity and insight. And isn't it wonderful what's happened to you? I mean, from the day that you, sort of a rainy day that you didn't have anything else to do. I mean, it's so funny. I tell people, he was just sitting around. It's raining. He's not doing anything. He decides to sit down and write a great book.
One, thank you for that compliment. I appreciate it more than you know. But yeah, it's hard to believe that this all started on a rainy day in August in 2015. I still can see it happening today. Me sitting on the couch, kind of flipping through the channels, nothing's happening. Tiger Woods wasn't playing golf. And all of a sudden, the images of Last Exit to Montauk began playing in my mind's eye. Opened up my iPad, and 6 weeks later, I was done with the manuscript for my very first novel, which had somebody told me in July of 2015, let alone prior to that, that would occur, and that 5 years down the road, I'd be on the on a nationally syndicated radio program with Patsy. I'd tell them they're crazy. So, it's just.
You've accomplished so much, and this is exactly what I'm talking about to people all the time, finding this joy on paper. And, when people think about, they have ideas in their head, and they sort of let them sort of flow away and don't concentrate on things. Now, in 2020, I think we have a few more people who have, they've had time to sit on their couches. And I hope that many of them have actually emailed me and said, well, I did finally start. I did realize that, I wanted to see, I had a book in me. And of course you had one book, now you're three books and it's growing. And once you start, you can't stop, right?
Well, I'll tell you what, the floodgates have certainly opened. I'm currently 3/4 of the way done with my next novel. That I anticipate coming out in the fall. It's called The Pain in Her Eyes, is what I'll share. The floodgates have opened. Since 2015, I've started, I have just a little, about 32, 33 manuscripts in development, including a screenplay manuscript for Last Exit to Montauk, which I've just completed Act 2, and I'm starting in Act 3, the final act.
Wow.
for that. So, the floodgates have opened. I'm very excited. And like you, I've had, friends and colleagues and former colleagues, come to me, knowing that I write and that I have novels available out in the market, I've started writing. So, my burgeoning, career as a published novelist, as an author, has seemingly inspired others to pick up their pen and pad and start writing, which I think is terrific and fantastic.
Well,
and I encourage everybody to write. Everybody has a story to tell.
That's right. Well, you are an inspiration. And once this pandemic thing is over, I know that you're going to start being able to go to book events, conventions, and all of this thing where you can meet more people. And have the opportunity also to make speeches and speak in front of large groups of people. Right now, we can't speak in front of we have to stand in our living room and talk to ourselves. But
our dogs.
If we're lucky to have a dog. So, but I know that big things are ahead in your future, including I hope that an agent will pick you up, because I think you have a big career in front of you.
And well, thank you. That's certainly a goal for 2021, is working with a lit agent and taking that the next step in my writing career. That's something that I want to do. I think with this new novel, Searching for Sarah, because it is not just a traditional coming of age love story, which certainly Last Exit to Montauk and The Captain and the Queen are more coming-of-age love stories. You know, they're set on Long Island in the mid-80s. I think with Searching for Sarah, it widens and broadens the audience, because it is an LGBTQ, love story and mystery as well. So it broadens the audience, and while still telling, in my opinion, a love story. Between two women who find true love in each other.
Well, Phil, I want to thank you. I want to thank you so much for being on Joy on Paper today. The name of the book is Searching for Sarah. It's available wherever books are sold, online.
Yep.
Phil, again, thank you, and Happy New Year to you and your family. And make sure you tell me your next pub date so that I can book you in. Okay.
I absolutely will, and people can find me on my website at philipvega.com. That's with two L's, so philipvega with two L's .com. Also at my publisher, thewordverve.com as well. So you can find me there. And again, Patsy, thank you so much for having me this morning. Happy New Year, and I wish you nothing but the best in 2021.
Thank you. Okay, bye-bye now, Phil.
All right, take care. Bye-bye.
Bye. Okay, everybody, remember what I tell you. One of the joys of life is to see your words on paper, or to hear them spoken in an audible book, or if you're very, very lucky, to hear those magic words, lights, camera, action, and your book will be turned into a major motion picture, a streaming video, or a series on the Hallmark Channel. You never know, and you won't unless you start trying. Remember, it's the beginning of January. If you start writing today, wow, by the end of the year, you're going to have a 360-page book. A real book. My goodness, isn't that exciting? It can happen to you. And then, never know, you might land up with a series on the Hallmark Channel, like I'm hoping for Carol J. Perry. And, of course, we have to look forward to the Lee Child Jack Reacher streaming video, which is coming up. How did that happen? He got fired. He got fired from his job, and he got mad, and he sat down, and he wrote a book. This can happen to you, but you have to get that fire in your belly and start writing. And wow, next thing you know, you're going to be here on Joy on Paper. Meanwhile, say something nice to somebody. I will say something nice to Big Ed in the control room. Thank you, Ed. It's been a great start to the new year. Max Allen Collins, my goodness, Mystery Writer of America, number 11 on Joy on Paper. Bye-bye, everyone.
WTAN Clearwater
FM 106.1
WDCF Dade City
FM 102.3
WZHR Zephyr Hills